Your News Talk, 1590 KVTA, Ventura.
The following is a paid program. Gold Coast Broadcasting is not responsible for its content.
Tom Spence receives additional compensation for his participation during the paid program.
It's time now for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. Now, here's your host, Colin Fluxman.
Hi, and welcome to the first in a series of shows devoted to helping you survive divorce. We'll bring you a wealth of tips and resources, and each week, guests specializing in various fields will answer your questions. Now, please remember that this is not intended to encourage divorce, but rather to help you cope with this traumatic time in your life. Well, as you heard, the show is called Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. And with that, let me introduce you to Lisa, a divorce lawyer out of Westlake Village. Lisa is a certified family law specialist focusing her practice on mediation and the collaborative divorce process and out-of-court solutions. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Colin, and thank you. I want to let the listeners know today a little bit about my background. I'm a divorce attorney. I've been practicing over 20 years. I'm a certified family law specialist, and that is with the State Bar of California Board of Legal Specialization. I devote my practice to mediation and peacemaking, and I also handle collaborative divorces. I'm really thrilled to be at the KVTA station today, and I want to dig right in and offer the listeners robust content so that they can use this talk show as a resource and a safe place to be heard and get answers to their divorce questions.
That's great. And we also have three other guests in the studio, what I like to call a lobby of lofty legals, among others, who will cover the emotional and financial aspects of divorce. Well, how do you, as a listener, get to ask a question? Well, grab hold of a pencil and paper, and I'll give you the details in just a moment. Lisa, I mentioned out-of-court solutions earlier. Divorce stats nationwide are pretty staggering. Is it part of your job to ensure that couples tap the brakes before they file?
I do think that lawyers have a moral obligation to check, to ask their clients if they've exhausted all of their options before filing for divorce. So some marriages can be saved if couples just do hard work with a licensed, trained marriage counselor or a trusted religious advisor. In fact, Colin, I've worked on several cases where clients have reconciled, and also I've had cases where the clients have decided to put the case on hold so that they could explore counseling.
What is their emotional state on their initial visit to you? I imagine they're pretty emotional and very upset. And quite nervous about this whole process. What is their state generally? What do you find?
Well, everyone's a little bit different. I do find many clients come in pretty harried. I can tell you when they're pretty emotional, it's apparent to me because they'll walk in, they'll be crying very quickly. They just don't know where to start telling their story. Sometimes they express that they have no idea about the finances and they're hoping that I can give them some clarity because they're very confused. You know, I have other extremes, too. I'll tell you, I do have some clients who come in with spreadsheets, and they're ready to divide up all of the assets. Absolutely. And in fact, sometimes they even have the custody labeled for, you know, blue and pink for boy and girl, just to show how they're ready to get the case done.
So basically preconceived ideas as to how it's going to pan out for them. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And you get it all straight in the end.
Of course.
Wonderful. Also in the studio today is Dr. Geetu Bhatia, a psychologist in private practice who serves as a divorce coach for collaborative divorce teams and co-mediates for the team mediation process. She's also an adjunct professor at Pepperdine University, is that right?
Yes.
And recently appointed president-elect of the LA County Psychological Association. That's a mouthful, and you certainly are very highly qualified. Welcome to the show. Dr. Bhatia, the decision to end a marriage, as we mentioned a little earlier on, is a highly emotional one. What are some of the more common feelings that couples experience?
Well, the decision to get a divorce is really often a very long process. When people go into a marriage, they're not thinking that one day they're going to get a divorce. So it is, even for the person who is initiating the process, it can bring up a lot of emotions. And especially for the person who's at the receiving end of it, it can even be more kinds of emotions of feeling helpless and frustrated and so forth. But it is like it's been compared to dealing with the death of a close friend. It's a death of a relationship. So many of the same stages and emotions of grief that people experience, such as denial, sadness, anger, all of these emotions are often very present, and maybe even added to that a sense of betrayal. Sometimes people are also in the stage of bargaining in their heads that if only they were not arguing so much that marriage can be put back together. So it is a lot of different feelings, and people talk about stages of grief, but it's not necessarily that there are clear linear stages that you go from feeling one emotion to the next and at some point get to an acceptance place. Mm-hmm. It can happen in any unpredictable way, and a lot of emotions can surface all at once, or they can die down for a while and then something new might happen. So you can't necessarily pinpoint to a few emotions. It can be a bunch of emotions. Also, if people have children, they are then not only dealing with their own emotions, but their children's emotions as well, and emotions of extended family members who might be invested in the marriage. So I think, needless to say, it is a lot of emotions that people are going through.
What about anger? You didn't mention anger. I imagine that is pretty much uppermost in the minds of a lot of people getting divorced.
Absolutely. Anger. And underneath the anger, sadness and hurt often is very much present for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned loss and separation getting in the way of making a good, sound decision. Do you have any tips for our listeners in that regard?
Well, you know, I like to use the metaphor of being in a fog. These emotions make you feel like you're surrounded by this thick fog. So if you can imagine if you're driving down the highway and there is very thick fog, you wouldn't want to be driving at freeway speeds. You would be wanting to take things slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So one of the things that is really important is for people to recognize that they are going through a difficult time, and this may not be the best time for them to make long-term decisions without some help and support, mm-hmm. and to slow down the process. So the decision-making at this time is very compromised, and it may be the best time to maybe seek the support of therapists or family members that they trust. The one thing that I often discourage people from doing is to collect a lot of people who are on their side, because that can continue to fuel the fires rather than help.
Yes.
Calm things down.
But that's a pretty natural thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think you need a few of those,
mm-hmm.
but you want to also make sure that you have people who have the wisdom and the calmness to be able to help them get out of the fog, sort of like using a police escort while you're going through a foggy area.
Yes.
And kind of, you know, stepping on the brakes when you see something coming your way.
Okay. Also with us today is Jerry Cohen, a local CPA and forensic divorce accountant. Now, forensic, when you think of the word forensic, you think of CSI and all of these medical shows, cop shows. But forensic, you'll explain as we progress in the program. So you kind of slice and dice the money, don't you, Jerry? What are the financial issues to consider before anyone begins a divorce process?
Yeah, it's important at the beginning of the divorce to look ahead a little bit, not only during the full divorce process, but what things may look like after the divorce is final. And I think that's one of the mistakes a lot of individuals going through divorce make. And understandably, they're very concerned with what's going to happen, how much am I going to get, how much am I going to pay, do I get to keep the house, a lot of different issues we'll be talking about. But I try to help them also focus on, from the very beginning, let's look at your immediate and intermediate and long-term goals. The more we can introduce some of the things that you may be concerned with in the future as far as taxes and you know, how much support am I going to receive and what am I going to have to live on, what am I going to have to pay, the more that we could do during the process helps us create an offer settlement agreements and options that both parties can come out a little better for, particularly on the tax part. For a lot of issues, and we'll get to this on later and maybe other shows, A lot of the tax issues are determined by what you do. And once you do it, and once the settlement agreement's final, you can't really go back and change that.
Yes.
So we try to encourage them to encompass, again, let's look at all the phases going forward and see what we could plan on, what options both parties have. And in many cases, it's a benefit to both. It doesn't always have to be a win-lose.
Right.
If we could create a tax situation or create each party getting something they're both going to be better off with, that's a win-win for everyone.
How does one ensure financial independence after divorce?
After divorce, kind of back to what I was just saying, I think it starts from the very beginning. Where I see couples come out the worst case later is they don't include any of that during. They fight for what they feel they should get. They make agreements that maybe they're pushed into making that with some advice and a little more thought they wouldn't make. And again, after the fact, things could be done, but it's a lot easier to have this planning in mind all along the course of the settlement agreement.
Lisa has also brought along her all-important paralegal, Sharon, who is the gatekeeper of Lisa's practice and a very important part of the team. Sharon is also the family law chair of the LA Paralegal Association. Do I have that right, Sharon?
You do.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We'll get to your very important role in this whole process. Well, that's our lineup of all our guests today, and a chance for you to call in with your question on the topic of discussion. Now, while we know you have many issues in your divorce or the divorce of a close family member, please confine your questions to the topic of discussion. We want to deal with your questions in relation to what we're talking about today. We will deal with a vast number of topics in the upcoming shows and the series, and hopefully covering most of the issues surrounding divorce. So if you'd like to call right now and ask a question of our panelists, the number is 805-650-1590. That's News Talk 1590 KVTA, 805-650-1590. You can call now, or if you wish to email, please do so at lisa@divorcetalkradioventura. One word, lisa@divorcetalkradioventura.com. Lisa, I would imagine that as a divorce lawyer, you get asked this question all the time. How should the divorcing parents tell their children?
I do get asked that question frequently, and I keep a pamphlet on hand in my office that is by renowned Dr. Joan Kelly, and that pamphlet deals with how to tell the children. I also encourage clients, in almost every case, to seek advice from a mental health professional, and I jokingly, and hope Dr. Batu won't get offended here, but I jokingly call our mental health professionals the mentals, just as a shorthand.
The mentals?
The mentals,
mentals.
Yes.
Better than being called psychos.
I would imagine. So, in any event, yeah, I generally would send the clients over to the mental health professionals, and I think they're, you know, best served by going there and asking those questions. But generally speaking, you know, the lawyers familiarize themselves with Dr. Kelly's research, and she's a groundbreaking clinical psychologist in the divorce field. She has countless publications that are available, and even a Bountiful Films documentary called How to Divorce and Not Wreck the Kids. Oh. So these are some important resources that are available, and I would send them on to someone like Dr. Geetu Bhatia as well, and maybe she can offer some suggestions right here.
Well, telling children depends on the age of the child and also the level of understanding they may have. So most children, especially the young ones, when they find out that their parents are going through a divorce, are most concerned about what happens to them. And often parents think that they have to tell the children about why the marriage didn't work out and all of those details. But I think what children need most is the reassurance that they're still going to have their moms and dads in their lives, that they're going to be taken care of, that things will remain in some ways very similar to the things that they've experienced in their life before. That, yes, it's a very sad time in their lives, and for all of them, they're going to need some help with coping with this difficult time, but that mom and dad are responsible and will make sure that they're okay.
I read somewhere that a very, very small statistic, very small amount, 5 or 10% of divorcing couples actually sit down with their kids and tell them about it. Is that right? Is this the case?
Unfortunately, yes, because a lot of times people don't plan how it's going to happen, and it becomes whatever, you know, gets talked about and fought about between the parents. One parent may decide to do that. Ideally, it is really important for children to have a coherent narrative of what happened and what is to come. So if parents can sit down together and first decide on how to present it to the children and stay away from blaming and shaming the other person, because children's self-esteem is often linked very much to their parents. So if something is awful about one of their parents, it hurts them and they feel not as good about themselves, and their self-esteem suffers. Mm-hmm. So much as it's very tempting to show how awful the other parent has been and why they're getting a divorce, it is generally advisable that parents do set aside their own emotions and put the children first, and put make a coherent narrative that they can keep revisiting, because children at different ages and stages in their lives may come back and ask that same question again. So if they have a sense that mom and dad really did try to work it out and did attempt to make sure things were not where they are now, then children do benefit from that.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonder Style every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. on Newstalk 1590 KVTA. My name is Colin Flaxman, and if you'd like to call the studio and talk to any one of our experts here, the number is 805-650-1590. 805-650-1590. The lines are open. Please feel free to call anytime during this hour. And if you choose to email, the address is Lisa, L-I-S-A, at divorcetalkradioventura.com. Lisa, once a client is ready to see you for the initial consultation and get started with their divorce, what do you need them to bring to the office?
Well, I ask clients to bring with them any of the documents that they would like me to review, first of all, because oftentimes they just have questions on their mind that I'm not necessarily aware of. But also, I ask them to bring basic financial paperwork so that I can look at things like tax returns and pay stubs and begin to assess the case for them and help them strategize. But I don't normally start off in that realm of reviewing documents. I normally start off talking to them about process and how they want to go through their divorce, which is something I'm sure we'll get to in another one of our segments.
Okay, so a reminder of the number again, 805-650-1590. Jerry, back to you for a moment. What types of documents should divorcing couples bring to their initial appointment? The documents, what can they expect to bring?
Colin, I'd be happy to answer that, but it's going to take more in a moment.
By all means.
This is my very, very important, I think, in the process. And I found in doing the work I do that the more data we have up front, the more information we have to make recommendations and suggestions, make sure that we include everything and it's not a surprise near the end. So I'll run through a short list of some of the things I ask for that you may not need to legally prepare your settlement agreement, but they're helpful things that would, again, as I mentioned earlier, help you with maybe saving taxes and getting a better settlement agreement. One I recommend that not everyone does is get a current 3-in-1 credit report. The 3-in-1 report is based on three of the major reporting agencies, and for some reason, sometimes something shows up on one report that doesn't show up on the other. And like everything else we'll talk about, it's important to get complete information. So it's helpful to know, even if you just kind of forgot about something or someone was negligent and didn't want to tell the other about it, it's helpful to make sure that you're aware of all issues in your credit report, any loans, any liens, anything else that shows up on that. And the earlier in the process, the better. Also, it's helpful to have copies of the deed and registration documents for cars and boats and certainly a home. There's information on there that's actually needed for the filing and also helps us gather our information. A current property tax bill is another good one that has information on it that's needed. As Lisa mentioned, tax returns are important for many reasons. We do have to look at income. There's various amounts of expense items on the tax return that are helpful. And as we'll talk later on some budgeting and planning issues, there's a wealth of information on the tax return that gets overlooked and actually not even needed to file, certain maybe credits that get carried over. You don't need that to get your divorce, but if I had a credit coming to me, I'd like to know about it. We look at payroll stubs, any appraisals you've had on any property or anything that documents the value of the property is helpful. If a business is owned by either party or both, there's financial statements and books and records from the business or businesses that are essential. Any financial statements on any rental property or anything else that's creating income. We ask for all the bank statements, investment accounts, any statement for any loans, certainly retirement accounts. And as we'll get into later, there's different types of retirement accounts, so we have to look for different issues. Life insurance, not that you may have that as a specific item on your settlement agreement or there's a number with it, but the type of insurance is important, who the beneficiaries are, what the death benefit is. Those all factor in somewhere in either a financial planning issue or the settlement. We ask to look at the employee handbook. There's almost every case, once we see that, there's some item that an employee didn't even realize they had if they've been working for the company for a long time that turns out to be a benefit and maybe even a community property issue. And unless we found that in the handbook, it kind of gets missed and no one really knows about it. Something more common on the next few items, certainly the monthly living expenses, both currently and what it may look like after the couple separated or divorced, and those could be two different sets of numbers. Absolutely have to know all the sources of income. That goes into support calculations, it goes into budgeting if we're doing that. So income and expenses are certainly two of the most important. And we ask for a list of all your assets, anything you own. If could be a chair in the bedroom, or it could be, you know, a bank account, but anything that you have that has value.
Or an island on the Caribbean, right?
If there's an island in the Caribbean, I have to go there personally and do an assessment of that. But after that, I'll come back and finish the work. And also any personal property, which we consider maybe not as much the exact amount it's worth, but sometimes there's just stuff in the house that we just have there and you
right.
both want it. So we have to know that it's there so we could help you come up with a way to decide who gets what.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Bhatia, what is the role of the mental health specialist on the collaborative team?
Well, it is, as I was talking about earlier, a time when people are having a difficult time communicating or even understanding the feelings that they're going through because they have the legal decisions to make, the financial decisions going forward, they have to co-parent their children, they have a lot on their plate. So a mental health professional as a divorce coach helps parents communicate their needs to the team in a way that is more effective, because if someone is bringing up the past a whole lot and it's not leading to effective decision making for the future, we may help the parties talk over their feelings and emotions in a separate session and help them see if they even maybe need therapy and direct them to therapy for that. So it's like providing a safety net and a coach, just as, you know, if you were learning to play basketball, you would need someone to be able to identify what your strengths and weaknesses are
right.
and how to maximize your abilities and strengths during that time. So a mental health coach helps parents get through that process, and even people who may not have children may have a lot of other decisions and other relationships that may be getting in the way of making sound decisions.
The number to call is 805-650-1590. We have a team of legal experts here in the studio answering your questions. Please confine your questions to the topics that we're discussing here today. Lisa, I understand that you'll get into more details about various options for clients in later shows, about whether they choose an in or out of court option. Do divorcing clients typically use mental health specialists like Dr. Bhatia and CPA forensic accountant Jerry Cohen?
Yes, I find that they most definitely will use both. And it depends on whether they're an in-court process or an out-of-court process. When I do mediation, as an example, the attorney can act as a neutral and facilitate agreements and also expand the mediation process to include the other team members, and that would be the mentals, like Dr. Geetu Bhatia, and also would include the financial specialists like Jerry Cohn. And so not only would they involve the clients in a team mediation approach, but also in a collaborative divorce process. And let me just give you a brief description of what the collaborative divorce process is.
Go ahead.
In that process, I would work with clients, as would another team lawyer, and use the team approach to for the divorce to help people create a safe environment to address solutions that are best for their family. And we do that with the use of the mental health professionals and the financial. So it's an integrated team process, and everyone has in their mind the common goal to help the clients reach decisions that are best for the family and for the clients themselves. The collaborative team lawyers and the other professionals are committed to staying out of court. And the reason this is a great process to consider for many clients is that the collaborative team lawyers have a motivation to settle, because if the case isn't resolved, the lawyers are out of a job. Also, the collaborative process is confidential and private, and the team meetings can be held in private offices as opposed to the courthouse. So this is definitely a process we want to talk about a lot more on this show.
Yes, of course. Jerry, back to you. I understand that you will be bringing listeners tips, as you started doing now, including common financial mistakes to avoid in divorce.
Yes, I'll give you a little preview. We'll be talking about tips before, during, and after. And most of them are oriented toward processing your divorce in the most efficient and cost-effective way. You know, as an accountant, a CPA, I'm always looking to help clients save money and get through a difficult process like this with the least amount of cost and time. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the more we prepare beforehand, and which is mainly the data gathering part, that makes it more efficient. During, a lot of things you've heard already, communications, produce, you know, answering questions, cooperating, working with the professionals to answer the questions and provide what we're asking for. And the after part is more of kind of a ongoing financial planning issues that I may not personally get involved with, but how we end the divorce is a beginning part for how to manage your finances going forward, and we like to at least help bring you to that point where you're ready to do that or work with someone to help you do that once everything's settled.
Sharon, a question for you. You're in direct line of fire, so to speak, when taking the initial call. How do you deal with these calls, with these emotional callers? I'm sure you get many of them. How do you handle the calls?
Yes, we do. Divorce is very emotional. But first and foremost, I think it's very important to listen. So I just listen. Whether I listen for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, I listen. I feel once I've listened to them and they've told me what they wanted to tell me, get it off their chest, then we are able to talk. And then I can ask them the questions that I need to ask, where they are at the stage in their divorce, whether anybody has filed, whether the other party has had contact with another attorney, and I can get a lot more information once I've listened to them. It's very, very important to listen to them.
So you're obviously a very good listener, right?
I think so. I hope so.
And the number for our listeners to call is 805-650-1590, 805-650-1590. You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. We're on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter, Divorce Talk Radio CA. Dr. Bhatia, coming back to the children of a divorce, what is helpful in coping with their parents' divorce?
Well, in talking about what's helpful, let me first talk about the thing that research has shown that is not helpful. Divorce often involves a lot of conflict between parents. If the conflict is resolved in a reasonable amount of time and people can go on with their lives, fairly soon, then children tend to do well. But if the conflict continues, then it is very detrimental to the children because the worst part of the marriage doesn't end for them. So the parents can end the marriage, but the children are still stuck in the bad part of the marriage.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So reducing conflict in any way possible is probably the most helpful thing people can do for their children.
Okay.
And speaking of conflict, there's the other two C's that are really important. One is continuity. Children need to have a sense of continuity as much as possible. So if they're still going to the same school and they can have the same kind of relationships outside of the family as well as when they, you know, were in the intact family, their relationship with their extended family members, their, you know, having the same teachers, the same friends and play dates, all the things that can be, if that continuity happens for the children, they tend to do better because they know that a lot of things might be changing, but a lot of things are still the same. Mm-hmm. The other C that is very important for parents is consistency. So if they were, they had expectations of their children within the family to be able to, you know, complete their homework, put away their toys, those expectations need to continue past the stage of divorce. Because when parents think, oh, our children are going through such a hard time, maybe we need to relax all this, it's actually scary for children because then they don't know what's expected and what's not expected, and it is more confusing. So consistency and continuity are really important in, and as I said earlier, to have a sense of calmness that comes back.
Yes, of course the age has a lot to do with it too. Depends on how old the kids are. They could be 5 or 6 years old or 15 or 16. So how you handle the kids depends on their age. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think that children at different stages have different needs, developmental needs. Younger children need the safety and security of knowing the consistency and continuity. The older children have the developmental need of defining themselves. So a sense of self is being formed in the preteen and the teen years. So helping them have a more secure sense of themselves through their parents is an important thing. So not putting down the other parent, helping them understand what relationships are, how to cope with difficult emotions, all of those things, are skill building is really important for the older kids as well as the younger, but more so with the older. And the older kids have a more abstract understanding of the world compared to the younger kids. So then you can give them more of a context of what to expect in their relationships and so forth going forward.
We have a caller on the line. Sandra, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You have a question.
Yes, I have a question. What is the, my ex-husband, actually, he don't want to be part when come with the children to tell him that he's going to leave.
You're breaking up a little. I understand that you, the problem that you have or the question that you have is that your husband or future ex doesn't want to tell the children that he's moving?
He don't want to be part of it. He don't want to be there when we have to tell the children.
Oh, I see. Dr. Bhatia, your response?
Well, once again, as we said earlier, giving the children a coherent idea of what's going to happen, what happened, and so forth, helps them feel trustful. So I would urge your husband to sit down and talk to the children because that will help them learn how to communicate their feelings now and in future. You don't want them to mistrust you and not be able to depend on you in the long run. So that by talking to them and explaining how things are and what's going to come up helps them feel more secure and safe, even though it's a very difficult thing to tell them.
Sandra, what is your husband's objection? Why doesn't he want to sit down with the kids?
Actually, he don't want to be part of being charged to tell the kids. Mm-hmm. He thinks it's my responsibility.
Why is that? Did he tell you why?
I don't know. I think he just want to get out of the package, as you said.
Well,
he just want to be free and leave all the responsibilities on me because I'm the one who stayed with the house.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes parents are happy to leave all the responsibility to one parent, and it's unfair to you to have to do all of it. But we all deal with difficult emotions in different ways, and many people like to avoid it. It works for a while. You know, you can avoid the feelings, and it helps. But in the long run, it's not all that helpful because those feelings are still there. And you don't want to teach your children to avoid real life and the emotions, the difficult emotions. So one of the things that I really believe, what is our job as parents? Our job as parents is to teach children to become responsible adults who can deal with difficult emotions. So we do have to live by example and show them that it is hard, but, you know, we just have to kind of deal with the things that are difficult too. I hope that helps, but even if you end up being the only one talking to the children, it may be okay to tell them that dad had a difficult time with this and we wish we could have told you together, but this is what we decided. So that the children know that this was a discussion you guys had.
Does that help you, Sandra? Does it give you any help?
Yes, that's giving me an idea. I think I should tell them that was our decision, even if he's not part of it.
And I think you'll agree, Dr. Bhatia, that it's not the children's, it's not their fault, and they're not to blame for it, right? This should be conveyed to the kids, am I right?
And, you know, I think, Colin, you're bringing up a very good point. Children are egocentric by nature. So they believe, because mom and dad often fight about parenting issues, they can start to believe that the divorce was their fault. And one thing all parents can keep reassuring the children and reminding the children over time is that the divorce is between mom and dad, and it is their responsibility, and they were the ones who had the problem that they couldn't solve any other way, but that it is not the children's fault. And even post-divorce, when the conflicts about parenting and co-parenting come up, it's really important to continue to reassure the children that it's not their fault. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Sandra. I have an email here, and incidentally, the email address is lisa@divorcetalkradioventura.com. Lisa, should we do family therapy? That's how this email reads. If so, how long until the divorce is done or longer? From Mary.
Well, actually, if the question is about family therapy, maybe that's something that Dr. Bhatia can address. But generally speaking, you know, there are options for clients to explore individual or family therapy. And oftentimes, you know, if they're still in family therapy, they won't be moving forward with the divorce process. Mm-hmm. So that normally, maybe Dr. Bhatia can speak to that issue a little bit.
Well, I think that the family becomes redefined after divorce. So the family may mean a single parent family. It may mean a step family. So family therapy can be useful depending on what the issues are. Often having parents, both parents and the children in therapy as a family therapy can be confusing, because then it may foster the hope in children that this means that mom and dad are going to get back together. If it's structured as a co-parenting session, then that's a different thing. I think it's really important to give the children a clear message of what therapy is about. And yes, I'm biased as a psychologist. I think therapy can be very helpful in getting through a difficult time. So utilizing any form of therapy can be good. And also we found that group therapy can be very helpful for children, because then they know that they're not the only ones going through this. And with the rates of divorce that are in our present times, they need to know they're not alone and that the feelings that they're going through are pretty universal, and that other kids may have utilized some coping mechanisms that can be used by them as well. And I know that there are co-parenting groups as well that are very effective in helping people see that the struggles that they're coming across can be dealt with in different ways. So we do need a community around us at times like this. For mm-hmm. So therapy in any form can be very helpful.
Another email for you, this time from Donna. Children playing parents, one parent against the other in the divorce process. I'm sure you've come across that a lot. How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, I think that it is very common that children will try to get the easy way out. And if mom is asking them to do homework, and then they can say, well, dad doesn't let me do this. Or if they want a candy and a treat after dinner, and mom is very, restrictive about it, they may try to play one against the other mm-hmm. in simple ways and in complicated ways. It's more likely to happen when parents don't communicate with each other. So I think it's really important to have lines of communication open. And so when children bring that up, you can say, well, you know, I'm going to check with dad whether that's his rule. And also sometimes you can assert that, you know, rules in each of our homes are going to be different. And sorry, if that's okay there,
it's not okay with me.
It's not okay with
me. Okay, well, that's one approach. Lisa, getting back to you, what quality should clients search for in a lawyer?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. There are lots of different qualities that clients should be looking to, including, and I think first and foremost is the qualification of the attorney. And so they need to look at the certifications. If the attorney, for example, is a certified family law specialist, that speaks to their passion in that particular field. So, for example, a family law specialist will have had to have met certain criteria in terms of number of cases they've handled in court and passed a certification test. And generally, so the certification process is one they might look at. As well, they might find out how many years the attorney's been in practice and make sure that they're a good fit with the attorney in terms of personality and accessibility. A lot of clients feel it's very important, and rightfully so, that the attorney actually promptly returns their calls. Imagine that. And that the clients, you know, feel if they email you and they have something that they feel is really important and pressing, that you're actually going to get back to them, and they don't want to hear that, you know, you're in court. I mean, they feel like, you know, I'm a paying client. I want you to be accessible and available to me. So availability of the client, experience and qualification, and also to make sure that that attorney is, you know, focused on the process that you want to use. So for example, if you're doing mediation, you want to make sure that particular attorney is not geared up for litigation. If you want a collaborative team approach, it's important to know how much experience that attorney has had in collaborative, because you know, there's not a one size fits all personality in terms of attorneys. And what happens is some attorneys may be a great fit for collaborative team process and others might not be. I mean, if you have a particularly aggressive attorney who's litigious and wants to be in the courthouse daily, that might not be the best attorney for collaborative work. So look beyond how the attorney's advertising themselves and dig a little bit deeper and find out if they're actually experienced in collaborative, if they're committed, if they belong to practice groups, if you know, they're doing the good work that you're asking them to do in terms of mediation. How often do they do it? How much training have they had as a mediator? You know, I mean, for myself, by example, I have taken over 100 hours of training in out-of-court processes, including mediation and collaborative, because it's something I'm strongly committed to. You might find some other attorneys, you know, say they do mediation, but if you dig deeper, you know, they may not have actually taken much training, and they may actually not take so many clients who want to mediate. So it's really important to make sure you're getting what you're looking for. And also checking rates is important. Obviously, you want to make sure it's within your budget as a client, that your attorney isn't charging you some $15,000 retainer, but then expects you to put in, you know, another $15 every month and replenish that. If it's something that's not within your budget, it's better to know that ahead of time than to find it out too late in the game.
Is that something that would happen at the consultation, or would that be on the telephone first?
Well, I mean, in my office, as an example, Sharon will do my intakes, and so I can turn the microphone over to her for a minute as well and let her speak to that issue. But generally, yes, I think the clients are going to find that out up front, because it's important to be very straightforward with your clients in terms of what types of business you take and what kind of fit you make for them as a client. I want to make sure the client's happy with me and that I'm happy with the client. So Sharon can speak to that maybe for just a minute or two.
Usually when the client does call in, the first thing on their mind is, how much does it cost? How much is it going to cost me? How much am I going to pay? And right up front, I don't give an answer because I simply can't. I need to evaluate their case. I need to find out what they have. If it's simple, which is somewhat rare, and uncontested, then obviously it's not going to be as expensive. I need to take into account whether they have properties, whether they have a lot of assets, are there businesses involved. I give them Lisa's rate, and then you know, I usually try and say, are you amicable, are you not amicable? It just depends. Mm-hmm. And then I invite them in and to meet with Lisa, to talk to Lisa, to see if it is a good fit. And okay. then she can get an idea of their case, assess it.
Does that does that initial consultation cost the client anything?
No, it does not, because okay. we want to make sure that the client is happy with us, and we want to make sure that we can work with the client. So this is why we do invite them to come and meet our attorney.
So how can clients reach you to make an appointment? Can you give us some details, please? Contact numbers, etc.?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.zonderfamilylawmediation.com, or they can find us on divorcetalkradioventura.com. Our telephone number is on the website. Our contact number here in the studio, they're welcome to call us, and we'd be happy to help them.
That's good. So feel free to contact Lisa directly. If you can get through to the show here today, then by all means, go to those websites and call Lisa, talk to Sharon and Lisa, and get this process for you going.
Khaled, yes. One other thing I would add, too, it's really important with initial clients when we're meeting for the first time that they're really clear about what their objectives are when they come in to meet with us, so that we understand what the objectives are and make sure that it's a good fit for us. I mean, if somebody comes in and says, you know, I want to draw blood, you know, this is going to be a bloodbath, you know, mm-hmm. I plan on taking complete advantage of my spouse, I'm going to take him to the cleaners after what he did to me or something along those lines, you know, I'm going to start to really assess whether I want this type of client and whether their objectives need to be, whether we need to reframe what they're trying to accomplish, or maybe even have them go for a consult with a mental health professional. So it's really important for me that I understand their objectives, and also I try to be careful not to speak too much legalese. So when you say what qualities should the clients look for when they call in, it's important. I've had clients come through the door and say, you know, I've been to two attorney consults. I have no idea what they are telling me I need to do. I'm so unclear. Every time I go to an attorney, I get more confused. And, you know, for me, it's really important to sort of slow down the process at that point and tap the brakes, so to speak, and say, okay, what are you confused about? How can I clear this up? So I think the communication is also really critical. Sometimes there's a huge communication failure between attorneys and clients. And I think that's something that, you know, it really needs to be explored when you're first meeting an attorney. If their style is a complete turnoff to you, you know, then trust your instincts and don't go there. If, you know, they want litigation and you want settlement, you know, question that heavily and think, you know, before you make a decision to retain that attorney.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Sonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. The number to call is 805-650-1590. Please feel free to call now. We have another 10 minutes or so before we wrap up today's edition of the show. Jerry, back to you. If a client is working with a divorce financial specialist, do they still need an attorney?
Yeah, my short answer is yes, yes, yes. The financial, legal, and I find in almost every case, emotional issues are all there. And I haven't met a well-trained professional yet that could do all three of them. And for me, the financial is certainly enough to keep me busy. And a big part of the divorce is legal. If I'm not an attorney, so I can't give legal advice. I don't spend my time keeping up in depth on the legal cases and legal issues. I do that on the financial and tax issues. So I think it is very important. And it also is, beside just a legal process, there's issues that you want to know about. I think each party should retain their own attorney, even in a mediation or other processes we'll talk about later time. You have some options on which professionals are on your team. In a mediation, if both parties work with one mediator to help reach a settlement or parts of a settlement, I absolutely also encourage and think it's unwise not to at least spend some time with your own attorney to get specific advice to the financial part of the settlement you may be agreeing to, and make sure your rights are protected and that your any obligations you have are also met. So absolutely, it's not one or the other. You need at least yes. both, and probably a team.
Well, okay, we have a team here in the studio to answer your questions, 805-650-1590. Lisa, for those just tuning in, would you please explain briefly the mediation and collaborative process?
Absolutely. And I just want to point out, Colin, that we'll be doing more in-depth topics on mediation, collaborative, and court process. So anybody who's still kind of, you know, mystified about these processes, we want to debunk these, you know, this whole process and make it easier and clear for people. But just real quickly, in terms of mediation, the lawyer who's doing mediation is facilitating an out-of-court process where they serve as a neutral facilitator and they're helping parties to reach an agreement. It's out of court, as I said, and if they're successful, the clients will end up with a comprehensive marital settlement agreement, and that gets filed with the court and hopefully stamped by the court so that the parties never have to see the inside of a courtroom for their process. With the mediation, the parties can be either represented by attorneys who look over their agreements and help them with any legal questions they have during the mediation process. In fact, they can hire them from the outset. If they do, then they can even formulate a strategy for when they come into the mediation about how to conduct the mediation. So they can be represented by counsel, or they can make a decision to be self-represented. However, if clients are going to mediate, I'll always recommend to them and encourage them to seek legal advice regarding the terms that are set forth in the marital settlement agreement, because, you know, that's something that they need to make sure that they're comfortable with, that they understand, and that's in their best interest. So that's basically, you know, an overview of mediation. If you want, I can tell you also a little bit about collaborative.
Yes, go ahead.
So in the collaborative process, just another brief description, that's a process where clients are going to work with a team of professionals. Each client would retain a collaborative divorce team lawyer. And so they would be represented by lawyers from the beginning of the process to the end, unlike in a mediation where you can bring in an attorney whenever you want in the process. With a collaborative, you have an attorney from the beginning all the way to the end. And also we bring in a neutral financial person like Jerry. He could be the neutral who collects all of the financial documentation and generates reports. And we would have divorce coaches. So the mental health professionals who are involved in the team, the collaborative divorce team, aren't doing the traditional therapizing, you know, Freudian style, sit on my couch, let's talk about how you feel about things and, you know, when you were a child, that kind of thing. But instead, they would be helping with communications. And I think Dr. Bhatia had elaborated a little bit on the role of the...
Right. I think coaching is different than therapy in that there's a time-limited, goal-oriented approach that we take, whereas in therapy, you can have longer-term issues that you want to deal with. And we don't do the couch thing anymore, Lisa.
Oh, come on now. Tell the truth.
But it is
more brief. It's a
chair,
it's a couch. Does it matter?
And time-limited and goal-oriented towards helping them get through this difficult time in their lives, getting out of the fog and into the future as, you know, divorced parents.
Lisa, is an out-of-court process always better for clients?
Well, there is no always. I don't want to talk categorically about anything. I think it's not a one-size-fits-all, and there's no panacea in collaborative or mediation or court process. We have to really focus on what's best for any individual client. And clients do tend to self-select into a particular process. You know, if there is an imbalance of power or domestic violence, as an example, we wouldn't necessarily encourage those clients to be in a mediated process. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some hurdles that can be overcome in some circumstances, but generally speaking, if there are certain personality disorders, certain levels of mistrust, some of those types of cases, if you look at typology of clients, you know, where do they fit best? What process works best? It's complicated. It's not so black and white. And clients do tend to tell you where they want to be in which process, also by budget, because sometimes they'll tell you some processes are just too expensive, frankly.
Well, speaking of expenses, yeah. I think one of the things as mental health professionals we can provide is a lot more time for less expense than spending it in attorney offices for, you know, emotional things that may not be best served there. So it can be a great team approach.
Jerry, I was going to ask you, what is the least costly way to get a divorce, if you could sum that up in a minute or so?
I could sum it up in one word, two words, I'm sorry. It depends.
It depends, okay.
How much stuff do you own? The more stuff you have, probably the more complicated it is. How much do you earn and what type of earnings? If there's children or no children, certainly how well you communicate with each other or not communicate with each other can make it more costly. On the surface, the least costly seems to be, well, I'll just do it myself and read an article or book, and sometimes that turns out to be the most costly. As we've mentioned, we'll be talking more about different options, and you have to, I think, compare the options and find the best process that works for you and get the right team of professionals, and that's probably the most efficient.
And just before I forget, because we're going to be signing off in about a minute or so, in next week's show, our specialist guest is Dr. Diana Barnes. Is that the correct way to say her name? Diana
yes.
Barnes, okay. A licensed therapist. She'll be talking about the need for a developmentally appropriate child parenting plan. Different parenting plans are available to parents depending on the ages of their children. Lisa, what are some of the topics our listeners can expect to hear over the course of the series?
Well, I hope to cover a wide range of topics, including court process, out-of-court processes like we've already alluded to, the mediation and collaborative divorce process, child custody, parenting plans, support issues, that includes alimony and child support, even dating after divorce, some fun topics, dealing with crazy spouses, and so many others. It's hard to even begin because I think we're going to cover a huge range of topics, Colin.
There's just so much to cover, isn't there?
There is.
And we've only scratched the surface here.
Yes, and we're excited. We do have a lineup already for our next few shows of some very interesting presenters, including Dr. Bruce Friedenberg, who does collaborative divorce, and Teresa Hayes, a local marriage and family therapist.
That's great. It's a great service. You can email us during the course of the week. Lisa has access to that email, and we'll look at your emails. Lisa@divorcetalkradioventura.com. Thank you, one and all. We had a very interesting first show. So until we meet again next Saturday, from Colin, goodbye.
Tune in every Saturday at 3 p.m. for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle.
This radio programming is not intended to encourage anyone to seek a divorce. The producers assume that callers are seeking basic information. The radio program is intended to be an informational format and does not constitute legal advice. Anyone with legal, mental health, financial, or other professional questions is directed to retain a competent professional after carefully interviewing qualified professionals. A guest appearance by a particular panelist does not constitute a specific recommendation by the producers as to the expertise of that professional, nor does that panelist's views necessarily reflect the views of the producer.